This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We were loose with the ball some. We turned the ball over, particularly at a significant period in the game, and we were highly penalized. And so, you know, we'll look at the penalties, man, and work to play cleaner. But it was an Achilles heel for us today. It extended drives. It allowed those guys to remain in the game.
Head coach Mike Tomlin, after a 26-21 win for the Steelers over the Denver Broncos, but not without its warts, not without its mistakes, as he highlights their post-game. And with that, I welcome you into the early morning show here on The Fan. My name is Matt Cole. I produce The Fan morning show after this, but on the air with you until about 5:40 before The Fan morning show pre-show to go over all things Steelers and Broncos from Heinz Field as the Steelers escape with another win. They're 2-0 to start the season. Those are all very, very good things. But it's a game that really feels like it should have been played last week. And that's what I came away with after Sunday. This felt like week one. There was a lot more rust in getting back to game action yesterday, I thought, than on Monday night against the Giants. And it leaves me wondering if we should be focusing more on the positives or the negatives, or whether or not the Steelers really even deserved to win this game yesterday. And I say week one because right away it was a little bit sloppy. And I'm referring to the first play of the game when Deontay Johnson fumbled the end-around attempt. And again, this is back-to-back weeks where Deontay Johnson, the beginning of games, this was the muffed punt last week, and now the fumble on the end-around to begin yesterday's game, where at the beginning of the game, you don't quite know if Deontay Johnson knows that the game has started yet. And his head might not be in it from the very beginning. And he is a bit of a curious case for me, because he did a lot of very, very good things throughout this game. Put up some big numbers. Ended up with 8 catches, 92 yards, and a touchdown. Pretty much led the way in receiving for the Steelers. But a curious case, because for as much as I love some of the things he does, he still makes some mistakes. I love the punt return ability that was called back. Also, the shiftiness on another punt later on in the second half. I love that he made a diving catch with his hands in the fourth quarter as he was reaching behind him. But then a couple plays later, he dropped a big third down catch to end that drive and to give Denver the ball back. As I'm skipping ahead way over to the end of the game, and I'll run through the rest of the game to get there, but skipping to the end, he dropped a big ball to allow Denver to get the ball back with a one-possession game to potentially win it. I love the way he moves in the open field. He's shifty. He's fast enough to break away. He's just a little too much of a wild card right now, and hopefully those things will settle down, and we won't see kind of the up-and-down nature of Deontay Johnson as he gets his feet wet more and more. He's only in his second year. But that's a little bit curious for me with Deontay. Drew Lock goes down in that first quarter, and initially that was a big sense of relief. Okay, starting quarterback's out of this game. You never want to see a guy get hurt, but they have to turn to Jeff Driskel now. We've seen him a little bit in Cincinnati. He can do some things, but he's a backup quarterback for a reason. And I thought, okay, even with just a touchdown lead at 7-0, this guy, this Jeff Driskel, won't beat them the rest of the way. And man, that wasn't necessarily the case. There were a lot of moments where I thought, oh my gosh, Jeff Driskel is going to win this game for Denver, if his name is hard to say or not. And Driskel hung in there and really, I thought, didn't blink very much. Yes, he made his mistakes in the end, but that was more of a case of the Steelers' defense getting at him relentlessly. And I thought that he settled in as the game went along. And I think that he exposed the Steelers' defense a little bit, because they were not great in coverage throughout this game, period. And it was the blitzing and getting after him that saved them. And I think we'll be there, of course, throughout the season. Mike Hilton with another sack. Can't give that guy enough love. Yes, he had the roughing the passer penalty, but he shows up every single game and makes an impact, and has done so through the first two games of this season. And he has got that knack for timing up the snaps, getting in the backfield, and wreaking havoc. He's got a little Troy Polamalu in him in that way. Overall, though, 7 sacks for the Steelers' defense. And let me hit you with some numbers here real quick to just go over the kind of pace that these guys are on. It's now on pace for 80 sacks this year. I know it's only 2 weeks, but that's 11 more than the team record. That's 26 more than the 54 it had to lead the league last year. And 28 more than it had to lead the league the year before. And thanks to Gene Collier for surfacing those numbers in the Post-Gazette. Yeah, it's a lot. And they're doing it well, again. And that's going to be there for them, of course. But then with about 6.5 minutes left in the first half, after Deontay Johnson's punt return was called back because of the really just dumb blocking in the back penalty, Ben responds by hitting Chase Claypool with an 84-yard touchdown. Ben on that real quick.
They had the safety down and just threw it up, and he made a play.
Boom, that easy. The rookie hits the home run ball, and man, it's got you thinking about the possibilities with this guy, at least for me. And he could be, at least this year even, and beyond, a direct replacement for James Washington. I'm not trying to run James Washington out of town, off this team, but that's Washington's role, is it not? The deep ball, the home run hitter. And he could easily jump over him on this pace. That's another man to stretch the field, another big body as well, which they don't necessarily have at the receiving position as far as being 6'4". And it gave me flashes of Martavis Bryant at his best with that play. Streaking up the sideline. He's got three steps in front of his defender, and Ben just drops a dime right into his chest, and off he goes. It's beautiful. Joe Hayden gets the pick right before halftime. The Steelers had shots at the goal line, and essentially from third and goal from their own 3, they give it to Connor there up the middle, which I thought was a conservative mistake from Randy Feetner, and they settle for being up 17-3 at the half. And then in the second half, it was weird that Ben's first interception comes whenever he could have basically packed a lunch, ate that lunch, thrown away the paper bag that lunch came in, talked to some friends about that lunch, and then still had time to throw it and forces the pick. Ben was a little hard on himself after the game.
I just didn't play well enough. Thankfully, our defense is awesome and fun to watch, and they bailed us out.
I think we saw two things early in that second half. One, as I mentioned, it was a settling in of Driskel to make it 17-14 to bring that game back into a one-possession game. And the second thing is that the running game, being ineffective, caught up to them a little. I thought there was a clear shift in play calling where it was a lot of underneath routes, it was a lot of quick passing to kind of make up for that, where they were getting the ball out of the hands of Ben Roethlisberger quickly, even if it was just for a 5-yard gain, because they thought it was a better strategy and better to do that than to hand the ball off to either James Conner or Benny Snell. And, you know, to kind of fast forward, Benny Snell's fumble when it was 26-14, Denver gets the ball back and scores to make it 26-21, that was a key moment because he could have put the game away and didn't and failed. And I'll have more thoughts on the running back situation here coming up. But they get the ball back with the final 5 minutes to try to drive it down the field. And here was the early test for this defense. And I mean early as in early in the season. When they're up 26-21, Denver's got the ball. They've got 5 minutes to play with. How good are you? Yes, you have these flashy stats. Another interception, a fumble recovery earlier in the first quarter, 7 sacks. Got all of these different things. You've been flying around and getting after the quarterback a little bit. But can you stop Driscoll from scoring to win this game? That guy, a backup coming into the game. And they almost didn't. And it was more because of head-scratching play calling on 3rd and 2 and 4th and 2 that they did stop them. Calling 2 passing plays instead of going to an effective Melvin Gordon. And it ends with a Terrell Edmonds sack. Terrell Edmonds, let's hear him just talk about it here real quick.
Man, it felt great. I knew I could do it. I'm just still out here. I'm going hard every day in practice. And when the time presents itself, go out there, make a play. My teammates, they know I can make the play. So we're just going out there, we're playing our football. And anyone on the defense can make a play anytime. But that opposing time, it was me. So thankful for it.
That sack on 4th and 2 to essentially end the game. Best play of Terrell Edmonds' career. I'm serious. That was the height of his career so far. Yes, it's weird to say that going into his 3rd year, but it absolutely was the biggest play he's made in a Steelers uniform. And it's another close loss in the end for Denver, and it doesn't feel like the Vic Fangio era is going to last very long there. He might not make it out of the season. So why did it feel like week 1? The sloppiness that I went over, and also the penalties. 10 penalties for 89 yards. Joe Hayden with some thoughts on those.
Man, I think some of those, I think some of the calls were, they were just bang, bang. You know, a lot of them we weren't really trying to get as physical. You know, we're trying to look at the tape and see what we can do. But some of those calls, you know, I feel like a lot of them were just bang, bang calls and they could have went either.
I'll agree with them a little bit on the pass interference calls. I thought there were a couple that really shouldn't have been called or couldn't have. If there wasn't a call there, I don't think anybody would have really complained. So I can get on board with them just a little bit. But 6 of the 10 penalties for the Steelers resulted in a Denver first down. That's an issue. And Mike Tomlin, you heard him to open the show, go over those issues. And that played a big part in keeping Denver in this game. I thought defensively, Watt and Dupree might be the best pass rush tandem in the league. Bud, so far through 2 games, I mean, he's really making it hard on the Steelers to decide what the heck to do with him next year and if they want to pay him the big bucks, because he is certainly playing like he deserves it. But Devin Bush and Vince Williams, I thought, were highly disappointing in coverage. Noah Fant, the tight end, is sneaky good because he's young. Not too many people know about him yet, but they needed to tighten up on him a bit. And I thought they let him loose, especially later on in that game. And then offensively, Ben was good when he needed to be. He certainly wasn't fantastic, but he scored in big moments like the bomb to Claypool when it was just 7-3. And then the drive capped off by Deontay Johnson, that touchdown, to make it 24-14 when they were only up by 3 there. So they had their struggles in coverage. They had their struggles running the ball, and they were penalized a lot. So it honestly felt a lot more like it was the beginning of the season rather than the second game and a game to build off of a week 1 win. And just a random thought here before I wrap up this first segment, there was a lot of jawing in that second half. Maybe it was a result of being able to hear everything and the CBS mics were able to catch all of that sound. And it was a little bit different than the NBC or the ESPN rather cameras in week 1. But I think the Steelers get a little bit more chatty when they're at home at Heinz Field, too. Fans or not, they get into it a little bit more. And there was some barking going on back and forth between the Steelers and the Broncos. And coming up next, some other things in the NFL from yesterday that you may have missed, especially if you're up this early, including a late-night thriller in the Sunday Night Football game. And then to end the show today, 3 big takeaways, bigger picture takeaways from this 26-21 win for the Steelers over the Denver Broncos. That's all next. It's the Early Morning Show right here, 93.7 The Fan. All right, some other things around the NFL that you may have missed if you're up this early. Let's get to it.
Time now for While Yins Was Sleeping on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.
First start with Sunday Night Football. It was the Patriots and Seahawks, and things just get a little bit interesting on the goal line between these two teams, if history tells us anything. And that's what happened yesterday as it went back and forth a little bit. The Patriots led a big comeback. Cam Newton, again, very active on the ground. 11 carries, 47 yards, two more touchdowns on the ground. He also threw for 397 yards. So yeah, Cam Newton still got some left in the tank and brought the Patriots all the way back. They got the ball late in the game. They're down 35-30. They're on the goal line, ready to pound it in for the victory. From a couple of yards out, here's what happens.
Fullback's going to shift to be lead blocker. Here we go.
Cam is going to take it himself, and he doesn't get in. And the Seahawks are going to win the game. Line up with a power formation, and you got L.J. Collier and Leno Hill are the two guys who are there.
Well, comes in the game as a substitute, is going to submarine here, take out the fullback, and take out Cam at the same time. No question about it. L.J. Collier in on the mix as well, but they went to their strength.
Yeah, New England went to its new bread and butter, and thank you to NBC for the call of that. Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, of course. Cam Newton tries the quarterback sneak, has his legs taken out, his legs went up in the air, and he fell short of the goal line and fell short of winning the game for New England. Bill Belichick told reporters after the game, "We had one play to score, and we tried to go with what we thought was our best play. And I thought it was Seattle that made a good play there." So Seattle on the right side of this goal line history, although I'm sure they would have taken the first one being in the Super Bowl a few years ago against the Patriots. Russell Wilson, 5 touchdowns, an interception as well. He was 21 of 28. Another efficient outing from who I think will be end up being the league MVP this year as the Seahawks get the win. They're 2-0 to start the year. The first loss for the Patriots. Otherwise, in the NFL this weekend, the Ravens beat the Texans 33-16. Lamar Jackson wasn't even all that good. He just had 204 yards passing and another, 54 on the ground, which isn't, that's kind of nothing for Lamar Jackson. It was on 16 carries as well. So Houston bottled him up, but it was Gus Edwards and it was Mark Ingram and it was J.K. Dobbins, each with at least 48 yards rushing in this game to kind of lead the way. And that's a little bit scary. That the Ravens can win even when Lamar Jackson isn't at the top of his game. That they can use their 3 running backs to win a game and to beat the Houston Texans. And that's interesting because the Texans, of course, are the next team on the Steelers' schedule. So they'll be heading in 0-2 as they continue to run through the gauntlet of AFC teams. Had the Chiefs in Week 1, Ravens in Week 2, and they'll have the Steelers in Week 3. So their season already in the balance, but not necessarily a very comforting sight, I don't think, for Baltimore to win that game. And then otherwise, in the AFC, the Chargers had Justin Herbert thrown into action as Tyrod Taylor had some chest pains, was out of this game, and Justin Herbert almost beat the Kansas City Chiefs. Brought them into overtime. Chiefs ended up winning that game 23-20 over Los Angeles, but Herbert was 22 of 33 for 311 yards and a touchdown, and they may have gotten their guy. It might not ever be Tyrod Taylor again. Might be Justin Herbert leading the way for the Chargers. And man, he looked good as a rookie coming into that game. All right, coming up next, 3 big takeaways from Steelers, Broncos, big picture that we can take into next week and for the rest of the regular season. That's next.
containers.
All right, we're here with you for a few more minutes on the early morning show before the Fan Morning Show coming up after this, starting with the pre-show at 5:40, 7 o'clock today. Ed Bouchette, Steelers insider here at the Fan, will join the show to break down everything from this win for the Steelers, 26-21 over the Denver Broncos. And right now, got three big takeaways that go from this game into next week and for the rest of the regular season. So here we go with number three. And that is that the Steelers special teams is a roller coaster ride. And while it's got potential, they've got to settle that thing down. Dustin Colquitt pulled his best Jordan Berry impression as he was backed up on his own goal line and shanked a punt. It didn't quite get to the 50-yard line. He was upset with himself right away. You could tell from that. I love that camera angle whenever they're backed up, where you're right behind the punter and you can see everything that's going on there and get a kind of a punter's view of it, I guess. And he knew right away when it came off his foot that it was not good, and it certainly wasn't. Gave Denver the short field that turned into 3 points. Deontay Johnson, while I love everything that he's doing in the punt return game, he's shifty, he's able to make guys miss, he's got the speed to go a little bit east and west before he goes north and south, and makes things happen. Ripped off a punt return touchdown, essentially, but was called back because of really a very soft block in the back penalty. Not soft as in it shouldn't have been called, but something that should not have happened. And you go back to, of course, Johnson's muffed punt last week. That shouldn't be the norm. It should be more of an irregularity for him. But that's something that comes back to bite them in bigger games and against better teams. Not having that special teams shored up. And that's a part of the game that's really rarely a weapon for a team, but can absolutely be a hindrance. And can absolutely be a reason why you lose a game. You know, and especially, and that's why I kind of advocated for Dustin Colquitt to come onto this team and for Jordan Berry to get out of town, because he did that a lot, and especially backed up in his own end zone, was shank punts and not get them down the field. And so that essentially that is a bit of a turnover. It acts like a turnover, and that you can't flip the field the other way and you give the other team, you know, the ball, especially and on the other side of the 50. That's huge. And that's something that can't continue to happen. And by the way, though, Ray McLeod, he's going to absolutely break one eventually. I mean, he is electric. That speed in the open field is incredible. And he's gotten close already in the first 2 weeks of the season. It's only a matter of time before he breaks one all the way to the house. Ray McLeod, you can see why he was kept on this team. And again, they were afforded that luxury because they've got multiple guys ahead of them that are ahead of him that are pass catchers. You know, you've got Deontay, you've got Juju, you've got James Washington, you've got Chase Claypool. You don't necessarily need him to be part of the offense. You can afford to keep a receiver that way just to be dynamic in the kick return game. And he will be eventually, Ray McLeod. All right, number two is that it might not matter who the lead back is between Connor and Snell, because the running game is not what's the key to this offense. And I think a sub point to that is that James Connor may never lose his job unless he's hurt. Connor had just 47 yards on 15 carries before his 59-yard run late. And so that's one of those instances where you look at the stat line, you see 16 carries, 106 yards and a touchdown, and you think he had a much, much more effective game, I think, than he did. I'm not saying that James Conner was rendered completely ineffective. I think he was good enough at times, and he wasn't didn't stick out like a sore thumb like he did in week one before he was injured, and that he was a little bit passive and was, you know, just kind of a hindrance to the offense. I mean, he also contributed in the passing game as well with 3 catches for 15 yards. So I'm not going to just rag on James Conner. But overall, the running game needs to step up. Benny Snell had a chance to put the game away, to run out the clock when they were up 26-14. He only got 3 carries. but fumbled on one of them. That is a huge issue, and that's something that Mike Tomlin addressed after the game.
I don't know that I have a level. I know that I've got some concern because we got to maintain possession of the ball, particularly in those significant moments. And so he's a young guy growing in terms of situational awareness and things like that. I'm sure it will be a growth experience for him, but we got some work to do there.
And as I mentioned earlier, they had to change things up in that second half. I thought it was noticeable that they went to shorter, quicker passes to make up for that running game not being there. And this goes back to last season when they couldn't run the football. And the excuse there was that there was no passing game to alleviate it. And okay, that makes sense. But maybe now you can use the excuse that David DeCastro was out, that they had a rookie at the line. You know, they have some injuries up there. Okay, you can say that, but maybe this running game just isn't as good as we all think it is or think that it should be with James Conner or Benny Snell. And that is a much, much bigger issue. And to me, that means why not take a shot and see what Anthony McFarland can do to spice it up. I'm not saying you give him 10-plus carries. I'm not saying you make him the lead back. But why not dress him, put him into the game, rather than seeing Jalen Samuels continue to trot back out there and see what he can do with that speed that you just don't have at the running back position. So I'd really love to see that starting next week and moving forward. And number one for me is that the Steelers aren't quite ready for the big boys. And they're lucky they haven't had to face any yet. The Giants and the Broncos, yes, you can make some of these mistakes. It's okay. You can have 10 penalties for 89 yards and you can get away with it. And you can be a little loose in coverage like they were yesterday and get away with it because you're still getting after the quarterback. You're still forcing young quarterbacks and Daniel Jones and Drew Lock and Jeff Driscoll into mistakes. But the rest of this little block here before the bye week and the schedule, if you're looking forward to it, you might not be able to get away with it as much. Starting with Houston next week, I know they're 0-2, but they face the Chiefs and the Ravens. Might be the two best teams, definitely in the AFC, maybe in football, after Baltimore, the way in which they won this past week against Houston, when Lamar Jackson wasn't even at his best, and they used their running backs to win that game. And then you've got at Tennessee, a playoff team last year. At home against Philly, they haven't looked very good so far this year. At home against Cleveland, and then at Baltimore. So maybe three out of those five teams you think are playoff-capable teams that you might not get away with making as many mistakes, being as sloppy as they've been through the first couple games of the year. So to me, they've got some cleaning up to do and some cleaning up to do very, very quickly here before they get into the rest of this schedule. So special teams, a roller coaster, got to settle down. Plenty of potential there, though. It may not matter between Conner and Snell because it is all on Ben Roethlisberger offensively. I think he showed that again yesterday. And clean it up and clean it up quickly, or else we might have some losses stacking up in the future for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Those are my takeaways from Sunday's game against the Broncos. All right, fan weather, it's brought to you by Sun Chevrolet and McMurray. The sun is shining on budget-friendly deals with 32 new and used vehicles under $19,996. Today, plenty of sunshine and a high of 68, and then tonight, clear and chilly, a low of 41. That time of year. Pre-show, it's next.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.